Elia Augsburger of The Animator Life. Welcome to a new podcast.
Hey, this is Nick.
And we have a special guest today. One of my best friends in the entire world, Christopher Curry.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Chris. What's up?
Don't do the creepy voice. That is so... That is, like... It gives me chills. It gives me chills that you do that voice. It really does.
That's all right. I found out another voice that I do now that we've been playing this new game called Lethal League in the house. I don't know if you've played it, but it's so much fun. But there's a character called Candyman, and he's obviously my type of character, and he's got, like, an awesome laugh. And I started to do it, and then my roommates, Alyssa and Austin, whenever I do it now, they both look at me with, like, joking hatred, and they just go, "Stop, please. You're making me cringe.
It's not joking hatred."
And then I just keep going, and it's great.
I don't need something else to haunt my nightmares. Thank you.
You're lucky I just don't live close to you.
That sounds like a perverted Pillsbury Doughboy. It's really not cool.
Yeah, it does. if you get Carl going, he does the laugh from Amadeus, like, just naturally. He'll be like, like, it's just like
I haven't
this.
Seen Amadeus yet.
Except my version's obviously more girly, but he does this man giggle that sounds like the guy who plays Mozart in Amadeus. And it's just fantastic.
Is it bad that my version of a male versus female version of that was picturing that exceptionally high-pitched one that you did just as an exceptionally deep voice?
No, have you not seen Amadeus?
Maybe not.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's been forever since I've seen it. If I've even seen it, I don't even remember at this point. I'm sure I watched it in music class at some point.
I love that movie. I think it's a great movie. And the guy who does the voice of Quasimodo in Hunchback of Notre Dame plays Mozart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in Animal House. I think he's done three movies. He's done Animal House, Amadeus, and then he's in Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Well, it sounds like a successful three movies, so.
Yeah.
Hey, man, end on a high
note. I think
he's
a big stage actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Chris, who the heck are you?
Oh.
Wow.
That's a loaded question, my friend. No, I'm, like you guys, an aspiring animator, you know, looking for work, so there you go, hire me if you'd like. Other than that, you know, not really much to me, just kind of a laid-back guy, and, enjoy watching movies and playing video games and all that good stuff.
I was gonna ask if I can tell them about your nickname, Chris.
Yeah, I suppose as long as it's not going to offend your viewers, yeah, I don't care.
So, I call Chris the Spicy Jesus because, oh gosh, this was like a couple of years ago. He had gone on a trip and he showed us his luggage tag where they had written his name as Curry, Christ and cut off the rest of the Christopher. And so we're like, "You're like a Spicy Jesus." And for whatever reason... For whatever reason, we thought it was ridiculous and funny enough that that's what we call him all the time.
So yeah,
that story yet.
Yep, that's my loving nickname, and is even my my Facebook banner, thanks to Ellie. So.
Thank you, Photoshop.
Yes, yes, thank you so much. And, you know, art school that I probably overpaid for. Chris, what is it that you're doing now? Don't you work a lot with, like, user interface and things like that?
Yeah, you could kind of say that. Mostly I am a developer for e-learning company, so we make online training for the apartment management community. Mm-hmm. And I'm specifically...
Well, I mean, you're still within the realm of the industry. Like, it's like a sister industry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's... You know, it's a pretty good job. You know, it pays the bills. It's not what I really, really want to do, but it's not so bad. I get to have fun. I get to work with a lot of cool people. I get to work with, you know, some artists and things like that. Since, like I said, I'm the developer, and I get to work with very talented graphic artists. So it's fun to see all the cool stuff that they come up with and get inspired by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. So is anything, like, new going on? I know that we were talking a little bit before we started recording about, like, really cool things happening in animation right now and kind of some of the things we're excited about. I know personally, I am really, really excited that there's finally going to be a new episode of Gravity Falls in a couple of weeks. if you do not watch that show, you need to do yourself a huge favor and start watching it because it's fantastic. And the last episode aired in March, and I have just been waiting anxiously for another one. And I saw that the next one airs on the 13th. So be prepared for the next time we discuss. It's like I'm going to be like, oh, Gravity Falls is so amazing.
Also be prepared for me to not have an opinion on the show yet because I haven't watched it.
Same here. I've never seen it or really even heard of it, so.
Really? You've not heard me talk about it before, at least?
You've probably mentioned it, but
best friends.
You can shut your pie hole, Nick.
Hey.
We talk a lot of things.
Just because we're best friends doesn't mean that I have, like, a notepad file open up of these are all of Ellie's favorite shows, and I should be respectful and know everything about them.
Really? Because I have a whole dossier on you. I have a whole dossier on you, Spacey.
I was going to say, is that not normal? That's how I remember things, man.
we're good friends, but I'm not stalkerish good friend.
I'm a stalker.
See, whenever like I'm thinking about you, that song by Sting plays in the background. I'll be watching you. That real creepy song that apparently some people think is sweet and is really just like, do you not listen to the words? So, yeah, I'm really excited about Gravity Falls. So, what about you, Nick? What are you excited about this week?
Well, it was more last week, but I've also played it a little bit this week. Arkham Knight came out. So excited for Batman Arkham Knight. Such a good game. I haven't finished it yet, and I won't spoil anything for anyone.
Yes, please
don't. My brother, though, he's a jerk. My brother came up and saved me for 3 days. No. He's a jerk. So, I have a PlayStation 4. I just got it recently, almost specifically because of Batman Arkham Knight, right? And I started playing it. I got maybe like 40% done, and then I started Animation Mentor this week, so I'm probably not going to get it done again for 12 weeks. But my brother came up and stayed with me for 3 days because he was in the area for a wedding. And he's just like, oh, I'm going to come stop over. So my brother, I'm playing the game on hard mode. My brother decides to put it on easy mode. And he's way better at the combat than I am. So he's just flying through the game. And he beat it before I'm even halfway through with the game. And now he's yelling at me every day. He's like, did you play it? I need someone to talk about this game with, Nick. Finish it. I'm like, Alex, I swear, like, if you spoil anything, I will kill you.
See, hold on. If your brother wanted to be enterprising, he would hold that over your head for, like, forever. Because when the last Harry Potter book came out all those years ago, my twin brother and I each had our own copy, and I read really fast, or at least in comparison to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get ahead, and Mom would be like, hey, I need you to do the dishes. And I'm like, hey, Mason, if you do the dishes for me, I won't tell you who dies.
Wow.
I won't tell you the next person who dies. Oh, did you read what happens to Dumbledore? And he's like, what? He's like, I'll go do the dishes. So that's what your brother needs to do. Your brother needs to be like, hey, Nick, I need to borrow like $50. Actually, you know what? I want $50. Or else I'm going to tell you what happens at this part of the game.
No, I got kicked out of my own room while he was playing that. I would walk in and he would be like, even though it's paused, if you look at this TV screen right now, you're going to ruin the end of the game for yourself. All right, Alex, I'll come back in a half hour when you're done with this mission.
See, I think spoilers should be like almost a capital offense. it's like, so you're charged with murder. Well, Your Honor, totally spoiled the ending of Game of Thrones. Well, it's completely justified. We're just going to acquit this trial. Have a nice day.
That was another thing. I've only seen the first season of Game of Thrones, but I've read all the books. I'm one of those. And so Mason would give me a hard time, and I'd just be like, hey, So, where are they at in the television show? Did die yet? What? He dies? I was like, oh yeah, it's like this huge gruesome thing. You haven't gotten there yet? My bad. And he's like, oh, I hate you.
Yeah, I'm pretty slack. I hadn't seen the season, this season's finale. I've seen everything up into the season finale, but not the actual episode, so.
Do not read anything online about Game of Thrones, because all they talk about is the season finale.
Oh, well, I'm pretty lucky that hype is pretty much passed at this point, so, like, there's no articles, yeah. But yeah, very much for, like, the next week and a half, like, I just had to avoid the internet, because.
Yeah, you just got.
I don't actually watch it.
I want to watch it because I've heard the effects are amazing. Like, the dragons and the White Walkers, like, just the CG effects are fantastic. And the first season, they might have had some effects. Like, the dragons were present at the end of the first season and stuff, and it's just, I don't know, like, I heard that it just keeps getting better on an effects standpoint, and that's part of the reason I want to watch it. But I just gotta find the time.
Yeah, like, honestly, the dragons right now are the only reason that I would watch it, just because I love dragons so much. But, like, I watched the first episode, and everyone yells at me for this, but I watched the first episode, and I was absolutely bored with it. Like, 100... What? I was 100% bored with it.
What? Okay? The first episode, like, within the first 5 minutes, you see, like, twincest and a kid get pushed off a tower.
That was the last 5 minutes. Like,
that was the last 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's like the first 10 pages of the book. It's like, oh. Happens like that.
No, well, no, yeah, like that was like the end of the first episode, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if the kid lives or dies. But like, other than that, I wasn't drawn into the show. And then people are like, no, you gotta give it like to the third episode. And I'm like, no. What's the first episode of a TV series called? They're like, a pilot? Yeah. What's the point of a pilot? To garner interest. Obviously. Well, it did not work for me if it didn't garner my interest.
I would say, with the exception of Lost, I don't think I've seen a pilot that really had me hooked. I usually try to give it 2 or 3 episodes, because with pilots, they try to start so much that it's just like, they're establishing so much in one thing that.
Well, I'm just going to say this, yeah. Like, I don't know, like, how many pilots, like, well, especially if you go back and look at, like, older shows and go look at the pilot as compared to, like, their very first episode of season 2, like, there is a huge noticeable difference in quality. So, like, yeah, I'm totally an advocate of at least giving a show, like, 2 or 3 episodes to get for you to get into.
Sometimes I will, but I typically don't.
Chris is part of the reason I got into Doctor Who, too. Actually, he's the main reason. And it took me 2 seasons to get into it. And I'd be like, am I really supposed to, like, am I supposed to be...
Can't do it.
Everybody hates...
Yeah,
Chelsea
yeah.
started watching it, though.
Why does everyone hate Chris Eccleston? He's, like, one of the best doctors. But everybody's like, oh, this is so boring and I don't like it. But then...
He grew on me.
You get...
The one where it's World War II and he dances with Rose, that's when I was like, okay... I can see his appeal, but it was just so hard.
Yeah.
It was so
hard.
Yeah,
just wait. Get to David Tennant, and then you'll be good.
Yeah, and when they bring in Matt Smith, the effects, like, budget had to have, like, tripled.
Oh, yeah.
It's so noticeably different. Oh, so other things to get excited about is this really cool new platform that was announced today on, or at least this week, a few people announced it on Facebook. It's called Artella, and it's an online animation collaborative, like, platform, where you can post a project and work on projects with people as an animator, or you can work as a modeler, or as a UV texture, like, if I'm understanding it correctly, they post a job and tell you who... what kind of roles they need people to fill, and then you can work collaboratively with people. And it looks like it's made by the same 3 guys who started Animation Mentor. But they haven't launched it yet, but what makes me excited is this prospect that you can work collaboratively with some, like, really good animators. If you go to artella.com, they show just kind of like some brief snippets of what the website will look like, and it shows Carlos Buena having his own project that he's directing a short, and you can sign on to work with Carlos as an animator, as a modeler, a texturer, lighter, etc. And just that idea that you can work collaboratively with people and work with people on a project, and it also kind of looks like it's something you can pick up and put down. So, like, if you're only free for a month, you know, because you're in between freelance gigs or something, you could go on and say, okay, for this month, I'll work with you on animation. And it just seems like a great way to connect with people and work with people to get some really good shots done. Because I don't know about you two, I would love to make a short, but I'm always kind of just...
Like babies.
Yeah, I just kind of hit this roadblock. It's like, okay, well, I don't know how to rig. And I'm not that great at modeling characters. I can model props, but I'm not that great at modeling characters. And it's like, I haven't lit anything in years. And so now all I'm thinking is, I really love animation. But if I want to make a short, it's going to take me like a year before I can even get to the animation part of it. And I think that this is great because, you know, that can help with that process. You can be connected with people who know the different aspects of animation. I'm super pumped about it. I can't wait till it launches. I'm going to sign up like the day it does.
I didn't actually realize that that's how it worked. I thought it was more of like a, you can use it for your own production kind of thing. But
you can.
Cool.
You can use it for your own, or you can sign up for other people. It looks like the AMP pipeline.
And I'm gonna say I'm. That's why I'm excited, because I just started the Animation Mentors Animals and Creatures class this past week. So
woo-hoo!
I'm right there with you, Nick. I'll be busy.
Yeah, buddy.
So we have to use the AMP pipeline for that. And at first, I was kind of skeptical about it because, oh no, change new. I don't like this. But after working with it for basically only like a couple days, like I am super pumped because it makes it like real easy, like especially like versioning your files and stuff like that. And it's cool, you can check in files and type in like notes like what you did, and then you can always revert back to those files if you need to. And so you can keep a nice log of everything that you've done to that file up until the point that you're in. And of course, if you check it out, nobody else can open up the file and mess with it. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. You know, the AMP pipeline seems kind of like their trial run at making this this, you know, whole cool new program. And so being able to you know, put it into a more professional vein and get, you know, everybody from, you know, the VFX industry and, you know, even storytelling, just, I don't know, it just seems awesome as a great community.
Thank you for reminding me. I need to get the new one.
And one of the things that makes me really excited about this, too, is I don't know how it would function with 2D animation, but I feel like we really need to save 2D, especially with the announcement that Disney World is closing their Art of Animation, you know, attraction. I don't even know what they're replacing it with some sort of NBA thing.
That's, no, that's Disney Quest. They're closing Disney Quest and replacing it with the NBA experience, whatever that is.
But it's like, you know, Disney Quest was one of the part... I didn't know what it was called, per se.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was one of, like, the best reasons to go to the park, especially as an animator, was to go through and see kind of all that stuff and how neat it was. And it just seems like, as time goes on, all of the big studios are distancing themselves from 2D.
I mean,
DreamWorks hasn't made a 2D film in, gosh, forever. And Disney's last one was, what, Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, I forgot those count.
And I mean, excuse me, but I mean, it just, we need to save 2D, I think. I feel like 3D animation should not replace 2D. I think that they can live in conjunction. And I'm wondering how Artella could help save 2D animation.
I'd be interested
to see how that would work.
It wouldn't be any different. Like, instead of just doing 3D stuff, you would just be doing 2D. Like, I don't think per se it would work any differently. Like, you would just have the sections might just be different. Like, you've got animators, but then you've got background artists, and then you've got colorists, and you've got shaders, and you've got cleanup animators and stuff like that. But I think the process itself would still be the same. Plus,
yeah,
I don't think 2D is as dead as everyone thinks. I think it's just that way here in America. But I don't know if you've noticed, overseas, 2D is still strong and kicking.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like Gobelins and everything. Watch their shorts. They're so good, and most of them are 2D.
Oh yeah, they're the studio that just released the ones celebrating women in animation, right? They did like the Mary Blair
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah. That
one,
I don't remember which one it was, but the one where she's like trying to feed the artist like film strips. That one was awesome. That was my favorite. Super dark and creepy.
I liked the one. I actually kind of like choked up a little bit. I wish I could remember the name of the woman they were honoring. The woman who essentially created silhouette animation. They showed dancing. And then, you know, she walks up to her window and you can see the Nazi flag
in the distance.
And I was like, and then she, you know, looked dejected and walked away. And I was just like, oh man, ugh, ugh, so many feels. Like, it was just, like, you could just, so much emotion and so much, like, powerful, you know, play and how they put that together
in a minute.
Not even a minute, in like 3 seconds that you see just the reflection of the Nazi flag in the corner and her face in that moment. It's just, it's like you went from being in awe and kind of happy and entranced with the dancing to like, oh my gosh, that's awful.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was, they were beautiful little shorts.
No, yeah, they were really nice.
Storytelling never ceases to amaze me, like how much you can get done in you know, a short period of time. You know, like probably my favorite animated short at the moment is definitely Paper Man. It really, you know, really got me.
Gosh.
I mean, all the new ones that come out, I can't remember the name of the new short, but the one with the dog who's like
Feast.
with his human, yeah, Feast, there you go. That one's really good as well, but you know, like it, I don't know, just being able to tell a short story in which you know, like Vine is really good for that sort of thing too. You know, you got 7 seconds to tell a story, and like it's mostly become a comedy thing, but you know, you can do some really cool stuff with it. And it always reminds me, I know everybody's gonna hate on me for not knowing the author of the poem, and I will misquote it, but it's like the shortest poem or shortest short story ever written, and it's basically, it's like baby shoes for sale never used. And
yes, is that oh crap, I know who that is too. Is that Hemingway? No,
I don't,
I'm not sure. I'm not a classical or well, literature is not my it's not my thing.
Not your
yeah,
bag.
But no, it's like I remember the first time I heard that, and I was, you know, it took a minute. Like, even though it's only like a two line thing, like I was like, okay, that's cool.
It's
and then I really sat there and thought about it. And I was like, oh man, like now I'm so sad. It's like, but you know, it's just, you know, just goes to show just the power of storytelling. And I think this Artella is going to be really cool, you know, really helpful, because I'm sure
yeah,
there's like hundreds and hundreds of great storytellers out there that just don't have a platform to really show their skills. And you know,
exactly,
being, you know, having this community, I hope we'll be able to revive that. And you know, along the same vein of revive 2D, you know, kind of like how Twitch and YouTube are kind of changing the whole what we think of like television and entertainment, you know, maybe this can kind of help, you know, revitalize the industry and, you know, find different avenues, as opposed to having to make these big blockbuster, you know, like 2D or 3D animation films. You know, you can do something that's really small budget and just launch it on YouTube and, you know, have great success there.
And one of the things that makes me really excited about it is, so I mean, I've been out of college for 6 years and been out of animation mentor for 2, and finding a job is just really hard, and it's hard to stay motivated, it's hard to stay excited. And I mean, I love animation, and no matter what I end up doing, even if I never get that job, I want to still animate for me. And this right here gives me an avenue to always be animating, which really, really makes me happy. Like, it makes the idea that I might never get that job a little bit more bearable, because at least I'll still be able to work with people on something. I'll be able to do what I love. You know, even if my name is only in a credit on YouTube, it's still on a credit on YouTube.
Hey, YouTube gets lots of hits.
Yeah,
a lot of people
exactly.
Will probably
so,
see it.
I mean, I have an avenue to connect with other people like me, because, you know, in small town Ohio, I mean, they're just not animators around here. They're not people to connect with. And, you know, it's just a great idea. It's that sense of community that I loved about being a student at Animation Mentor mm-hmm. that I'll be able to get with Artella. That's what makes me so excited.
Yeah, honestly, like, everyone, like, a bunch of, like, the really close friends that I have now are, like, through Animation Mentor. And
yeah, same here.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, I've missed the classes and everything, so that's part of the reason I went back. Like, I actually, you know, Steve Cunningham, like, I messaged him when I decided to go back and signed up for class and everything. And I was like, hey, Steve, I'm going back to class, and, you know, I got hired on at the job and everything. And Steve was great. He goes, dude, that's awesome. Why are you going back to class? I was like, I wanted to. I don't know.
Can I just give a quick shout out to Steve Cunningham? Because I had him for an instructor, too.
He's awesome.
Yeah. If you guys are taking Animation Mentor or any classes anywhere, I don't know if he teaches at some of those other platforms, and you get the option to take Steve Cunningham, take him. And he will scare the crap out of you your first day of class because he will tell you, hey, these are the school's requirements for each assignment. Now, I'm adding my requirements on top of it. And he will make you reblock and reblock and reblock every single week, as well as keep up with everything else. But he is so knowledgeable, and he's so supportive, and he'll push you hard, but it's never malicious. It's always encouraging. It's like, okay, if you do this, you'll get better, and I want you to get better. And he's always available. You shoot him an email, he responds back within, like, a couple hours. It's great. Like, he's by far one of the best teachers I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
So if you guys, like, don't be scared. You will learn so much from that man.
Yeah, I can honestly say that I wouldn't be, my animation wouldn't be where it is today, even today, without his help. Because, yeah, he definitely pushed me, you know, pretty hard. And I learned so much in the class that I had him for. And even the syllabus that I think it was, it was body mechanics. I may be wrong. But even then, even in body mechanics, like, I was just doing some simple, you know, like, I don't know, I think it's the lift the chair shot. And he was just like, but think about why your character is lifting that chair. and like, what's the story behind it? And I was like, oh, no.
I was told I had to do it, so that's why I'm doing it. He pointed out to me that I need to have more people than just myself do reference because I move funny.
I hope he said it just like that. I'm pretty sure he did too.
Because I had a character who was standing up on a chair, and, like, you know, you shoot multiple takes of reference, and so I have me standing up on a chair multiple times and just not thinking about it. I was trying to do. So my character was standing on a chair to try to reach something on a top shelf. I was trying to do the reach in different ways, because to me that was the main part of the thing. Steve had such an issue with how I made that character stand on the chair, because to put his foot up, I bought the foot from the side of the chair instead of just going in front of it and stepping on it like a stair. Mm-hmm. And he's like, nobody does that. Like, go back to your reference and look at it. And I'm, like, looking at my reference with him. Like, we're in class. And we're looking at my reference, you know, on the screen. And I was like, no, like, every time I stand on the chair, that's what I do. Like, I bring my foot up from the side. And he's like, nobody does that. You're just weird. Go have somebody else do it and film them doing it. And you'll see that they'll go at it like a stair step.
I think that happened on my chair climb, too. I did probably a similar third assignment as you did. But I don't remember what part of it, but he said, like, one of the ways that I was doing something in that shot was just weird, and I should think of some other way of doing it. He just reminded me. I think that shot that I worked on with him is by far my best animated shot, like, ever. Like, I've gotten the farthest with it, and still when I show it to people, everyone laughs. Like, even if they've amazing. Seen it, like, 1,000 times, I still get chuckles. And every time someone laughs at, like, an animation you make, you're just like, I did it right.
Did I do something cool? Or are they laughing at how stupid it is? Did I do this?
I like that you quoted the blog there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm glad that you caught that. I'm glad that you follow my vlog.
I do. I go on it, like, not every day, but, like, every couple days to see what's new.
Well, because, like, since we're already talking about motivation, I did also want to do a shout-out to Animator Island's 51 Great Exercises to Master for Animation. You can just Google it. It's one of the first things that pops up. But they have different levels. And I was trying to start doing that at first for a while. And then I ended up just getting discouraged because you have to start with a ball bounce and work your way up. But I do think that these are exercises I'm going to start doing again. So if anybody would like to do these with me, there's a group on Facebook, the Animator Life Support Group. Go ahead and join. I'll approve it. You know, we can discuss doing the exercises together and maybe do a hangout on the weekends, and I'll work on it together. I think that would be something pretty cool. But I right now, my biggest struggle is motivation. And I know that I'm not alone in that, so...
I was actually just listening to... I think it's actually a pretty good idea to start with the ball bounce again, only because I was listening to an animator doing, like, a little class. His name is Zach Parrish. He was a graduate of AM, but he's been working at, like, Disney for a few years now. And when he worked on Tangled, he said that for action shots, what he would do for blocking is he would literally just take a ball and just animate the ball going through the scene at, like, the speed and everything, like, for Flint, say, or for Rapunzel. And then what he would do is he would maybe not necessarily copy it, depending on what it's doing, but he would take that animation of the ball and make that the hips of the character. Mm-hmm. And then just after he's got the hip animated, then he would just go in and layer on the feet and do what they were doing, and then he would just build up the body from there. I was like, ah, that's a pretty cool way of approaching an action shot.
Yeah, that is. That is a pretty cool way.
And it started with a bouncing ball.
Well, let's move on to our next thing on the agenda. We're filming this on July 3rd, so tomorrow we're getting ready to celebrate how American we are and enjoy our roots. And so we thought we would discuss the most American animation. So first one, which one do you guys think is the most American character in animation? Doesn't have to be an actual American person. It doesn't have to be just someone who encompasses the American spirit.
You want somebody that, like, actually encompasses the American spirit, or one that's, like, more of a stereotype of the American spirit?
Either. I love the American stereotypes. I really do. Like, I know I should be offended, but, you know, like, going on Tumblr and looking up, like, things in America and listening to those and reading those questions, it just gives me so much glee. It really does.
Well, that's why, like, you know, this is a little off topic, but, like, one of my favorite, like, American jokes is, you know, why aren't there any knock-knock jokes about America? It's because freedom rings.
Freedom doesn't knock, it rings.
But, I don't know that encompasses a stereotype, and I don't know why, but this is just kind of the first one that came to my mind, but it's Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Dude, okay, yes, no, I felt the same thing, and I was just like, I don't know if this is offensive or not.
Gaston
was my first thought.
Yeah, it's first, like, just the whole, you know, the whole macho attitude, and this overconfidence, and super cocky, all about guns, and hunting, and shooting, yeah. Like I said, it's the American stereotype, but it just, I don't know, it cracks me up.
I'm glad, I don't
He's
feel
not
as
fat
bad.
Enough to be yeah, American.
I don't feel as bad having thought of Gaston first now.
Well, I wanted to be kind of like a smart aleck, and I wanted to say the eagle and rescue is down under, but I looked it up, and it's not even a bald eagle. It's a golden eagle. I was really upset. I was like, I'm going to tee this up to say the best joke ever. Like, it's the eagle. And I there's got to be, like, an eagle in Pocahontas just squawking
there's
like across
characters.
The screen. Like, that's the most American animated character in the world. Yeah. Well, no, I feel like picking Pocahontas with Native Americans is literally too easy of a choice.
Oh, yeah.
They've literally always been here. Though, I must say that Pocahontas' civil disobedience does quite capture the essence of what it is to be an American. Just saying. The defiance. We're gonna fight. Though, sadly, while we're on Pocahontas, I think, like, what's the... begins with an R. The bad guy.
That's not him.
Yes, thank you, Ratcliffe. I was gonna say Rasputin, but I was like, that's not even close to be right. Ratcliffe probably encompasses the idea of the American corporations. We'll get political.
Yeah, I can honestly. It's been so long since I've seen Pocahontas, so like all I remember is Pocahontas, dude, like John raccoon. Smith and the hummingbird and the raccoon. that's about you all should, I remember you should from it.
Netflix it. It's pretty good on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, another good one. I don't know. Just makes me think, or just in general, like the movie Fern Gully.
And this was our last podcast.
We are so dissing America right now.
Well, but I mean, no, it's great because, you know. Well, but you know,
the NSA shut us down.
But Fern Gully is like, you know, is a movie all about redemption, you know, in a sense. And so, like, you get like this typical, or what I guess American stereotype worker who, like, oh, I don't care about anything, just doing this for a paycheck. And then he gets, you know, shrank down. Spoiler alert, you know, gets shrank down. And,
okay, and that movie is what, 20 years old?
Hey, you never
I don't
know.
Think there's such thing as a spoiler alert anymore.
But,
If we just spoiled Fern Gully for you, then it's not our fault.
So wait. Are we saying that now that the spoiler alert law has like a what do they call it?
Ratified.
What do they call it? Statute of limitations now.
Yeah. Okay. Like seriously, if I tell you the Rosebud is a frickin' toboggan sled from the very beginning of Citizen Kane. That movie is like 90 years old. You should know that by now. It is part of culture.
The only reason I know what you're talking about is because our teacher in college made us watch Citizen Kane. Other than that, I would have no idea what you were talking about.
I'm probably going to lose a lot of like pop culture street cred, but I did not like Citizen Kane. I understand why it's important to cinema. But I hated watching it.
Well,
I don't like watching movies, to be honest.
Honestly, I mean, yeah, the story is what it is. And like I said, I'm the same way. I wasn't super duper crazy about the story. And, you know, I recognize, but the cinematography in it is just fantastic. Like if you,
yeah.
I forget one of my mentors recommended me to watch it and literally just pay attention to. The cinematography and how everything is staged in the scene, and like when you actually like sit down and look at it from that, it's like everything is just brilliantly laid out, and it's definitely like I completely understand why, you know, it can be considered a masterpiece. And I mean the story is good too because you know it's definitely a good character arc for Mr. Kane, the main character, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I have two characters for American, you know, one's the stereotypical, Wyatt Burp from Fievel Goes West, the Don Bluth American Tale story, because when you meet Wyatt Burp, who is voiced by Jimmy Stewart, he's a little bit of a lazy guy who doesn't want to do anything, but then he feels called like he has to do something and ends up eventually, like, coming to the aid of people, but for the most part he's just really lazy, which is the stereotypical American, sadly. But on the other hand, I think like a character who really encompasses the American spirit, that, you know, the one that we're raised to believe in, as a good example is Tiana from The Princess and the Frog. You know, that idea of working really hard, and like, I feel like what she's doing is trying to achieve the American dream.
I'm such a terrible person. I have yet to see that movie. It's on my list of ones to watch, and I just haven't got around to it yet. I need to watch it.
Oh,
yes,
you gotta watch it. You guys,
so bad. So bad.
What is the matter with you?
I'm actually really interested in the villain, just because I like crazy people, and the voodoo aspect seems pretty cool.
The most entertaining part about that movie is the crocodile. Or is he an alligator? I don't remember. I'm
pretty sure he's an alligator. He is.
Yeah. He's one of those two. And he is entertaining. And Eric Goldberg animated him.
Oh, fantastic.
And they actually brought in someone to play the trumpet. And they, so when Lewis does, you know, the key things for the trumpet, they're the actual right way to finger those notes. Mm-hmm. So if you watch it quickly enough, you could probably learn how to play whatever song he's playing.
Just because you know the keys doesn't mean that you can blow into the horn correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't. I can't play brass.
I can't. My brother can. I cannot.
So, I can't believe you guys haven't seen it. You need to watch it. It is so good. It really is. It's just
send
fantastic.
Send me a copy of it, and then I'll send it to Chris.
Yes, I'm going to personally fund your animation library.
I mean, just send us your copy, and then I'll send it to him, and then he'll send it back to you. That's how this works. It's like a library system.
See, I don't like loaning things. I bet that libraries actually have it. You could probably go to a real library, Nick, and get it.
Oh, man, I gotta find a real library.
I was going to say, do libraries still exist? Have they not been made obsolete by the internet yet?
I hope so. I like libraries. I like going to get audiobooks.
So, like, what do you guys think is the most American, you know, movie story?
I don't even know.
Really? You haven't thought about this? I think,
I thought about it. I just can't think of anything. There's probably one that is, like, so super obvious, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm in the same boat. Like, I've been trying to think of something... And I just really haven't.
Yeah, I've had this. You gave us this topic for like 3 days, and I still haven't come up with anything.
No, we talked about this like a month ago. This has been on the schedule for forever that we were going to discuss this.
Okay, that makes it even worse.
You know, we're going to get a lot of comments, and everyone's going to say, "Hey, this is so obvious."
Yeah, I know.
Carl's contribution was Pocahontas, by the way, and I'm like, oh, so obvious. So obvious.
I'm with you. That does kind of seem a little easy. Yeah. I want to go with... I don't know.
Really? I think Hercules is kind of like a really good story about, you know, essentially what it is. The American dream idea. You know, he was born into a certain circumstance and he wanted to improve it and he wanted to be something different than what he was. He wanted to earn the big fame, fortune, well, maybe not the fame and fortune, but he wanted to earn his rightful place where he thought he belonged. And I think that idea of wanting to belong somewhere and wanting to improve your life is very American. And, you know, the idea we want to project to the world is that we will fight for the little guy. We will help. I don't necessarily know if we're that successful in doing it. But, you know, like, the American idea I dream of is, like, you know, you work hard, you achieve what you want, and then, you know, maybe what you thought you wanted isn't exactly what you do want once you get there. You know, because kind of how Hercules, spoiler alert, though I shouldn't need to say it, though Hercules does eventually achieve becoming a god and an immortal, he gives it all up because he decides he'd rather stay with Meg. So... You know, that idea of working hard. Also, Phil. The character Phil is a fantastic example of American, like, just people... Americanness. Americanness. Because he's ridiculous, he's funny, he's short and fat. That's America, we're short and fat. That's just our people. That's how we are. That's how you can spot us in the crowd.
I love how that's now, like, whatever the subtitle of America. It's like, welcome to the United States of America, short and fat. There you go.
You know, he's got, you know, a hot head, but he doesn't, like, he's not malicious. I feel like sometimes Americans tend to be a little bit hot-headed.
But yeah, you know, talking about that, you know, you briefly mentioned it, you know, American Tale, Fievel Goes West, but, you know, the original American Tale, I mean, it's basically literally all about that. It's, you know, about immigrants migrating to the United States and the hardships that they have to endure and, If you haven't seen it, totally recommend go watching it. As a kid, you know, you're like, oh, this is a great animated movie about mice and cats and rats and stuff. This is fun. And then you go and watch it as an adult, and you can really see, like, all the politics behind it. And, I mean, it's not, like, super heavy-handed or anything, but you can definitely see, you know, drawing from, if you will, like, the how America was formed and, you know, how we're just kind of this giant melting pot and people come from all different places, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have not ever been able to get my hands on the first American Tale. But I grew up watching Fievel Goes West and other Don Bluth movies, and Don Bluth knew how to terrify children, I think.
Yes.
I think he just knew how to make things that were terrifying and entertaining at the same time, which is great. I think I still love his movies, but even as an adult, like the Secrets of Nim is just horrifying. Especially now that I'm old enough to understand that, you know, NIM is the National Institute of Mental Health, and that they were doing scientific experiments on all these poor animals.
I need to go watch that movie.
It's, I mean, it was just horrifying.
Yeah.
I think that one's on Netflix as well. A lot of really underrated animated films are on Netflix if you look for them, like Pocahontas.
Are the Triplets of Belleville still on there? Because that was another one. Yes. I wanted to watch.
Yes, that one's still on there. It's on my queue. I just haven't had a chance to watch it. I've heard good things about it.
I've seen some stuff from it. The animation's really good. A lot of weird characters.
Yeah, yeah. It was nominated for an Oscar, wasn't it?
It's something. Yeah, it was a pretty big one. Yeah.
Back in the day. So moving on to different stories. What about songs? The most American song
in an animated movie.
It doesn't have to be a movie. It can be a TV show. I don't think there's much songs in TV shows, though.
I can't think of anything that's not sarcastic.
I don't. What gets me? I don't know. This isn't from an animated film. Yeah, this isn't from an animated film, but you know, from The Karate Kid, you're the best around.
Nothing ever's gonna break it down. You're the best around. Okay. So, I have to tell you guys that for the longest time, if somebody drops a sentence around me that it's part of a song, I will immediately pick up that song and start singing it. And my parents hate it. Or I'll try to bring song lyrics into, you know, normal conversation just to see if anybody notices. And my parents hate it so much. I've rubbed off on Carl to the point that he will do it too, and it's great. And so, and we'll start singing together. And he said something to me the other day about how I was the best wife. He's like, "You're the best around." And then we started singing, "And nothing's ever gonna bring you down," like in our cheesiest, 80s, rockinest voices that we try to do.
Oh yeah, I love doing that. We recently did that at work, me and a coworker, with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme. And we just like narrated it like as a story. We'd mentioned something like maybe about Will Smith, and he was like, "Oh yeah, he was West Philadelphia born and raised." And then the other one was like, "You know, I hear on the playground is where he spent most of his days." And just continued on with that back and forth. It was all real good fun.
I did not know until recently that there's a full song. It's not just the intro of the TV show, but there's like a whole like 3-minute song. Yeah, I did not know that because we were at a karaoke bar and they played it in the middle of like while the DJ was playing a break, and we're like, oh, and so we started rapping.
All of a sudden it changed.
And then we had to stop because it was like, I've never heard this before.
Spoiler alert, there's more.
Yeah. I was like, I've never heard this. And then we picked it up at the end, you know?
Yeah.
I was actually listening him yesterday at work. no shame.
Oh, I thought of another thing for American. Have you guys seen Fantasia 2000?
Not that I would recall it.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
There's a second Fantasia movie with all new songs and everything. Like, they did Pomp and Circumstance, the song that everyone plays at their graduation, except they did it with Donald Duck as Noah from Noah and the Ark, and he and Daisy are trying to get all these animals onto the Ark, and he gets frustrated and flabbergasted and freaks out. But Eric Goldberg, it's really good, and they picked a lot of really great songs. Like they did, Beethoven's Fifth with Wales, and it's just gorgeous. Like some of the things they did.
But that's just really good.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. But Eric Goldberg directed Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. And if you guys have ever heard that song, or if you've never heard it, you should do yourself a favor and go on YouTube and search it. It's 16 minutes long, but it's considered the great American composition. George Gershwin used to do musicals with his brother Ira. And, you know, like American in Paris. You've probably heard a lot of his music just, you know, from being around and being a part of pop culture in general. But he himself is, I think, I want to say George and Ira Gershwin were first generation Americans. But their parents were immigrants. Or maybe they immigrated when they were little. It's one or the other. So he himself has a very, you know, very American idea of the story for the American dream. But the animation that goes along with Rhapsody in Blue, it takes place during, you know, they're building a skyscraper in New York. And the characters on the screen reflect the characteristics of whatever instrument they're reflecting. So the very beginning of Rhapsody in Blue, which is part of the reason I love it, because I played clarinet, starts with this big clarinet solo for about 10 measures, I want to say. And in the screen, you're introduced to one of the main characters who's a very tall, thin black man. You know, one of the ebony stick, because that's a nickname for the clarinet. I'm not being racist. that's a nickname for the clarinet. The old ebony stick. And, you know, as different instruments come into play, you see more characters that encompass the idea of those instruments. But it follows these people around as they're trying to live their lives in, like, a 1920s New York. And it's a really good watch, and you guys should check it out, because that's, I mean, it just, you get so many sense of what it was like to live in that era. Like, it really just does have a really great feel to it that is something you would only feel from watching something American, I feel like. So you guys should check it out. And you should check out the rest of Fantasia 2000, because they do Stravinsky's Firebird, which is beautiful. And, you know, really, it's just a great watch.
I don't know. Anybody mentions Rhapsody in Blue, I don't know why, but I always think of the singing frog from, like, the old, I want to say it's Hanna-Barbera cartoons, but the, hello, my honey, hello, my...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I always think about.
Yeah, it's... Well, Rhapsody in Blue's been used in, like, snippets in a lot of movies, and I think JetBlue, the airliners, uses it as their theme song.
Oh.
So,
fun fact for the day.
Little note for you. You'll listen to it and you'll know you've heard it before. You just won't know where. And it's because the answer is you've heard it everywhere. And then for another American song, I feel like Out There from Hercules, or not Hercules, Hunchback. The song that Quasimodo sings at the beginning about how he just wants to be out there, out with people. Like, just give me one day and I can prove myself. And I feel like that encompasses a lot, too. Even though it's a French dude singing it.
What's the name of the fat gargoyle? Could he be considered American?
It's either Victor or Hugo.
I don't remember what his name is. I remember the actor, Jason Alexander, does the voice for him.
Yeah, because he eats a lot. He's always eating something. That's right. Yeah, he might be the most American character ever.
One of my favorite lines is when he's just like, let's pour the wine and cut the cheese.
Oh, goodness. All right, well, we're inching closer to that hour mark. Do you guys have any final thoughts before we close up for the day?
Just something that I was going to bring up before when Chris brought up Feast. Fun fact, Patrick Osborne is now working directing another short over at Google.
Oh, sweet.
For their Google Stories app.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I forget the name of it, but he's working over there as one of their new directors.
That's fantastic.
Throwing that out there. Oh, I think it might be Pearl. I think the name of it is Pearl.
Sounds great. What about you, Chris?
And Justin Lin did one too.
I don't really have anything. I think we've covered quite a bit.
No shout out for the women's soccer team.
Oh yeah. I totally forgot. We got all on our American kick, and I totally forgot the best part is the American women's team made it to the finals. If I'm not mistaken, we're going up against Japan Sunday, July 5th. So totally tune in. I mean, this podcast is going to go live after the fact. So, you know,
I hope you watch.
Yay, America! If we won, and oh, I'm so sad if we lost. But yeah, I'll definitely be tuning in and cheering on our women's national team, and hopefully we can pull out a victory this year.
Woo, go USA, USA.
That actually reminds me of, I don't know if you guys watch Last Week Tonight at all.
Yeah.
But he did a snippet on FIFA.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was one of the greatest things I've ever watched.
That flatter.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. When he was just talking about, what is it? Leave it to America to do something about FIFA, the country that cares least about the sport, to make a difference in FIFA.
I love the fact that he made good on his promise.
Yes.
Where he was talking about, if we get Sepp Blatter out of FIFA, like I'll drink a Bud Light Lime on TV.
And he did, and called it champagne.
Yes, bravo, John Oliver.
It was because of that snippet, like that video on YouTube, that I'm just like, I'm going to make you my sole news source for everything in current events.
That might be a tad irresponsible.
Hey, it'll be more up in current events than I currently am, so.
Hey, if you want that, go watch, well, it's a little late now, but Jon Stewart and the Colbert Report, even though both of them are leaving, and I'm super sad about that. Colbert Report is being picked up. Well, actually, both of them are just transitioning hosts, and so they'll have a new host, which would be like the first time in, like, I don't know, like 20 years or something like that. Like, the show's been on for a while. But yeah, great source of news and comedy.
You can watch him get older as the seasons go.
They actually did a compilation for Jon Stewart of an honor to him, they did a frame from each episode for every like half second or something like that, all up until the last. And so you watch him age over the years as he did the Daily Show.
You could play it backwards and pretend he's Benjamin
Button. Yep.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks so much for coming on. This is awesome.
Thanks,
hopefully,
dude.
We'll have you on again soon. And this is Ellie Augsburger for The Animator Life. If you guys have any questions, you can email us at animatorlifepodcast@gmail.com. You can leave some questions or comments on the Tumblr. We'd be happy to hear from you. And we'd love to hear your input on the American
Please
stuff.
Tell us what that most obvious one is that we happen to have missed.
Yeah, the one that we're not thinking of. Or even tell us like some super clever ones. We would love to hear what you guys think. Good or bad, because obviously we did the stereotypes and the positive stereotypes that aren't really stereotypes. Anyway, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Nick.
And I'm Chris.
The spice of Jesus. All right, everyone, have a good day. Thanks for listening, and keep living the animator life.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's Little John today. That's good.
Well, when you proposed that topic, like, I was like, oh yeah, that'll be totally fun. And then like I tried to think of stuff, and I'm like, oh no, oh no. Well, like, you know, like, I wanted to start relating, you know, like, other stories to, you know, the American Dream to whatever, to other animated stories. But, like, I didn't want it to come across as, like, oh, there it goes, typical American putting themselves in everything. Because, you know, like Mulan, you know, like, you can pull aspects from Mulan as kind of, like, the American Dream of, you know, like, sense of duty and I know that's mostly a... you know, an Eastern culture thing, but, you know, but still, I mean, we have a strong sense of duty, over here in America. And then if nothing else, like, just, oh, you said I can't do this? Well, too bad. I'm gonna do it anyway because I'm awesome. You know, like that, like just that whole motif. But, you know, yeah, I didn't want to just be like, everything is America. Well, I haven't stopped recording yet, so. So you'll have all my extra clippings.